I'm getting to bed early every night, she assured him. I'm certain you are, he said dryly, but that wasn't what I asked. Are you getting enough sleep? Peregrine blushed. Of course I am. Tachyon replaced his equipment in his bag. How's your menstrual cycle? Any problems? Well, I haven't had a period in a while, but that's not unusual, even though I'm on the pill. Perry, please try to be a little more precise. How long is a while? She bit her lip and waved her wings gently. I don't know, couple of months, I guess? Come here. He led her into his bedroom, and her wings instinctively curled over her body. The air conditioner was going full blast, and it felt about 20 degrees cooler. Tachyon gestured at the bed. Take off your jeans and lie down. Are you sure this is a medical examination? She asked him teasingly. Do you want me to call a chaperone? Don't be silly. I trust you. You shouldn't, Tachyon leered. He raised an eyebrow as Peregrine kicked off her Nikes and peeled off her jeans. Don't you wear underwear? Never. It gets in the way. Do you want me to take off my shirt, too? If you do, you may never leave this room, Tachyon threatened. She laughed and kissed his cheek. What's the big deal? You've examined me a million times. In the proper surroundings, with you in a medical gown and a nurse in the room, he retorted. Never with you naked, almost naked, he corrected, in my bedroom. He tossed her a towel. Here, cover yourself. Tachyon admired her long tanned legs and shapely buttocks as she arranged herself on his bed, draping the towel discreetly over her hips. The blast of refrigerated air coming from the laboring air conditioner raised goosebumps all over her, but Tachyon ignored them. Your hands better be warm, Peregrine warned as he knelt next to her. Just like my heart, Tachyon said, palpating her stomach. Does this hurt? No. Here? Here? She shook her head. Don't move, he ordered. I need my stethoscope. This time he warmed the metal head with his hand before placing it on her stomach. Have you had much indigestion? Some. A strange expression crossed Tachyon's foxy face as he assisted her off the bed. Get your jeans on. I'll take a blood sample, and then you can go play tourist with the others. He got the syringe ready while she finished tying her track shoes. Peregrine held out her arm, winced as he expertly raised the vein, swabbed the skin above it, inserted the syringe, and withdrew the blood. She watched in fascination and suddenly realized that the sight of blood was making her ill. Shit! She ran into the bedroom, leaving behind a flurry of feathers, and leaned over the toilet, vomiting up her room service breakfast and what was left of last night's dinner and champagne. Tachyon held her shoulders while she was sick, and as she sagged against the tub, exhausted, wiped her face with a warm, wet washcloth. Are you all right? I think so. He helped her to her feet. It was the blood. Although the sight of blood has never bothered me before. Peregrine, I don't think you should go sightseeing this morning. The place for you is bed, alone, with a cup of hot tea. No, she protested. I'm fine. It's just all this traveling. If I feel sick, Josh will bring me back here. I'll never understand women. He shook his head sadly. To prefer a mere human when you could have me. Come here, and I'll bandage that hole I put in your arm. He busied himself with sterile gauze and tape. Peregrine smiled gently. You're sweet, doctor. but your heart is buried in the past. I'm getting to the point now that I'm ready for a permanent relationship, and I don't think you would give me that.
And he can?
She shrugged, her wings moving with her shoulders. I hope so. We'll see, won't we? She picked up her bag and hat from the chair and walked to the door. Perry, I wish you would reconsider.
What?
Sleeping with you or sightseeing?
Sightseeing, wicked one.
I'm fine now, please. Stop worrying. Honestly, I've never had so many people worrying about me as on this trip.
That's because, my dear, under your New York glamour, you're incredibly vulnerable. You make people want to protect you.
He opened the door for her. Be careful with McCoy Perry. I don't want you to get hurt. She kissed him as she left the room. Her wings brushed the doorway, and a flurry of fine feathers fell to the floor.
Damn, she said, stooping and picking one up. I seem to be losing a lot of these lately.
Indeed, Tachyon looked curious. No, don't bother with them. The maid will clean them up.
Okay. Goodbye. Have fun with your tests.
Tachyon's eyes were worried as they followed Peregrine's graceful body down the hallway. He closed the door, one of her feathers in his hand.
This doesn't look good, he said aloud, as he tickled his chin with her feather.
Not good at all.
Peregrine spotted McCoy in the lobby, talking to a stocky, dark man in a white uniform. Her two other companions were lounging nearby.
Hiram Worcester, she reflected, was looking a little haggard.
Hiram, one of Peregrine's oldest and dearest friends, was dressed in one of his custom-made tropical weight suits, but it hung loosely on him, almost as if he had lost some of his 300-plus pounds. Perhaps he was feeling the strain of constant traveling as much as she was. Father Squid, the kindly pastor of the Church of Jesus Christ Joker, made Hiram look almost svelte. He was as tall as a normal man, and twice as broad. His face was round and gray. His eyes were covered by nictitating membranes, and a cluster of tentacles hung down over his mouth like a constantly twitching mustache. He always reminded her of one of Lovecraft's fictional deep ones, but he was actually much nicer.
Perry, said McCoy, this is Mr. Ahmet. He's with the tourist police. Mr. Ahmet, this is Peregrine.
This is a pleasure, said the guide, bending to kiss her hand.
Peregrine responded with a smile and then greeted Hiram and the priest. She turned to Josh, who was watching her closely.
You okay? Josh asked. You look awful. What did Tachyon do, take a quart of blood?
Of course not.
I'm fine, she said, following Ahmed and the others to the waiting limo.
And if I keep saying that, she said to herself, maybe I'll even believe it.
What on earth? Exclaimed Peregrine, as they stopped in front of a metal and glass guard station. There were two heavily armed men inside the box, which stood next to a high wall that surrounded several acres of desert that was the temple of the living gods. The whitewashed wall was topped with strands of barbed wire and patrolled by men dressed in blue and armed with machine guns. Video cameras tirelessly surveyed the perimeter, the effect of the pure white wall against the shining sand and bright blue Egyptian sky was dazzling.
Because of the Nur, explained Ahmed, pointing to the line of tourists waiting to enter the temple grounds. Everyone has to pass through two detectors, one for metal and the other for nitrates. These fanatics are determined to destroy the temple and the gods. They have already made several attacks against the temple, but so far they have been stopped before doing much damage.
Who are the Nur?
Father Squid asked.
They are the followers of Nur al-Allah, a false prophet determined to unite all Islamic sects under himself, Ahmad said. He has decided that Allah desires the destruction of all those deformed by the wild card virus, and so the Temple of the Living Gods has become one of his sect's targets.
Do we have to wait in line with the tourists? Hiram broke in peevishly. After all, we're here by special invitation.
Oh no, Mr. Worcester, Ahmed hurriedly answered. The VIP gate is this way. You will go right through, if you please.
As they lined up behind Ahmed, McCoy whispered to Peregrine,
I've never been through a VIP gate, only press gates.
Stick with me, she promised. I'll take you lots of places you've never been before. You already have.
The VIP gate had its own metal and nitrate detectors. They passed through, watched closely by security guards, dressed in the blue robes worn by adherents of the living gods, who thoroughly examined Peregrine's bag and McCoy's camera. An elderly man approached as McCoy's equipment was being returned. He was short, deeply tanned, and healthy-looking, with gray eyes, white hair, and a magnificent white beard that contrasted nicely with his flowing blue robes.
I am Opet Kamel, he announced. His voice was deep, mellifluous, and he knew how to use it to demand attention and respect. I am the head priest of the Temple of the Living Gods. We are gratified that you could grace us with your presence. He looked from Father Squid to Peregrine, Hiram and McCoy, and then back to Peregrine.
Yes, my children will be glad that you have come.
Do you mind if we film the ceremony? Asked Peregrine.
Not at all. He gestured expansively. Come this way, and I'll show you the best seats in the house.
Can you give us some background on the temple? Peregrine asked.
Certainly, Kamel replied as they followed him. The Port Said wildcard epidemic of 1948 caused many mutations. I believe they're called, among them, of course, the celebrated Nazir, Al-Haziz, Kof, and other great heroes of past years. Many men of Luxor were working on the Said docks at the time and were also affected by the virus. Some passed it on to their children and grandchildren. The true meaning of these mutations struck me over a decade ago when I saw a young boy made clouds drop much-needed rain over his father's fields. I realized that he was an incarnation of Min, the ancient god of crops, and that his presence was a harbinger of the old religion. I was an archaeologist then, and had just discovered an intact temple complex, he pointed at their feet, beneath the ground right where we stand. I convinced Min of his destiny and found others to join us. Osiris, a man pronounced dead, who returned to life with visions of the future. Anubis, Taurt, Thoth. Through the years, they have all come to the Temple of the Living Gods to listen to the prayers of their petitioners and perform miracles.
Exactly what kind of miracles? Peregrine asked.
Many kinds. For example, if a woman with child is having a difficult time, she will pray to Taurt, goddess of pregnancy and childbirth. Taurt will assure that all will be fine, and it will be. Thoth settles disputes, knowing who tells the truth and who lies. Min, as I have said,
can make it rain. Osiris sees bits of the future. It's all quite simple.
I see.
Kamel's claims seemed reasonable, given the abilities that Peregrine knew the virus could awaken in people. How many gods are there?
Perhaps 25? Some cannot really do anything, Kamel said in confiding tones. They are what you call jokers. However, they look like the old gods. Bast, for example, is covered with fur and has claws. And they give great comfort to the people who come to pray to them. But see for yourselves. The ceremony is almost ready to begin.
He led them past groups of tourists posing next to statues of the gods, booths that sold everything from Kodak film, key rings and Coca-Cola, to replicas of antique jewelry and little statuettes of the gods themselves. They went past the booths, through a narrow doorway into a sandstone block wall set flush against a cliff face, and then down worn stone steps. Goosebumps rose on Peregrine's skin. It was cool inside the structure, which was lit by electric lights that resembled flickering torches. The stairwell was beautifully decorated with bas-relief carvings of everyday life in ancient Egypt, intricately detailed hieroglyphic inscriptions, and representations of animals, birds, gods, and goddesses.
What a wonderful job of restoration! Peregrine exclaimed, enchanted by the beautiful freshness of the reliefs they passed.
Actually, Kamel explained, everything here is just as it was when I discovered it 20 years ago. We added some modern conveniences, like the electricity, of course. He smiled.
They entered a large chamber, an amphitheater, with a stage faced by banked stone benches. The walls of the chamber were lined with glass cases displaying artifacts that, Kamel said, had been discovered in the temple. McCoy meticulously recorded them, shooting several minutes of footage of painted wooden statues that looked as fresh as if they had been painted the day before, necklaces and collars and pectorals of lapis lazuli, emerald and gold, chalices carved of translucent alabaster, unguent jars of jade, intricately carved in the shapes of animals, elaborately inlaid tiny chests, and gaming boards and chairs. The exquisite treasures of a dead civilization were displayed before them, a civilization that Peregrine reflected, Opet Kamel seemed, with his temple of the living gods, to restore.
Here we are, Kamel indicated a group of benches at the front of the amphitheater close to the stage, bowed slightly, and departed. It didn't take long for the amphitheaters to fill. The lights dimmed, and the theater became silent. A spotlight shone on the stage. Strange music that sounded as old and eerie as the temple itself softly played, and the procession of the living gods began. There was Osiris, the god of death and resurrection, and his consort, Isis. Behind him came Hapi, carrying a golden standard, Thoth, the ibis-headed judge, followed with his pet baboon, Shu and Tefnut, brother and sister, god and goddess of the air, floated above the floor. Sobek followed them, with his dark, cracked crocodile skin and snout-like mouth. Hathor, the great mother, had the horns of a cow. Bast, the cat goddess, moved delicately, her face and body covered with tawny fur, claws protruding from her fingers. Min looked like an ordinary man, but a small cloud hovered above him, following him like an obedient puppy wherever he went. Bes, the handsome dwarf, did cartwheels and walked on his hands. Anubis,
the god of the underworld, had the head of a jackal. Horus had falcon-like wings. On and on they came, crossing the stage slowly, and then seating themselves on gilded thrones as they were presented to the audience in English, French, and Arabic. After the introductions, the gods began to demonstrate their abilities. Shu and Tefnut were gliding in the air, playing tag with Min's cloud, when the unexpected, deafening sound of gunfire shattered the peaceful scene, evoking screams of terror from the spectators trapped in the amphitheater. Hundreds of tourists leapt up and milled about like terrified cattle. Some bolted for the doors at the back, and the stairways soon became clogged by panicked, shrieking people. McCoy, who'd pushed Peregrine to the ground and covered her with his body at the first sound of gunfire, dragged her behind one of the large, elaborately carved stone pillars flanking the stage. "You okay?" he gasped, peering around the column at the sounds of madness and destruction, his camera whirring. "Uh-huh. What is it?" "Three guys with machine guns." His hands were steady, and there was an edge of excitement in his voice. "They don't seem to be shooting at the people, just the walls." A bullet whined off the pillar. The sound of shattering glass filled the air as the terrorists destroyed the cases filled with the priceless artifacts and raked the beautifully carved walls with machine gun fire. The living gods had fled when the first shot sounded. Only one remained behind, the man who had been introduced as Min. As Peregrine peeked around the pillar, a cloud appeared from nowhere to hang over the terrorists' heads. It started to rain torrents upon them, and slipping and sliding on the wet stone floor, they scattered, trying to find cover from the blinding cloudburst. Peregrine, digging in her bag for her metal talons, noticed Hiram Worcester standing alone, a look of fierce concentration on his face. One of the attackers gave a distressed shout as his gun slipped from his hands and landed on his foot. He collapsed, screaming, blood spattering from his shattered limb. Hiram turned his gaze to the second terrace as Peregrine pulled on her gauntlets. "I'm going to try and get above them," she told McCoy. "Be careful," he said, intent on filming the action. She flexed her fingers, now encased in leather gauntlets, tipped with razor-edged titanium claws. Her wings quivered in anticipation as she took a half-dozen running steps, then beat thunderously as she hurled herself forward and launched herself into the air and fell jarringly to the floor. She caught herself on her hands and knees, skinning her palms on the rough stones and banging her left knee so hard that it went numb after an initial stab of excruciatingly sharp pain. For a long second, Peregrine refused to believe what had happened. She crouched on the floor, bullets whining around her, then stood and beat her wings again hard. But nothing happened. She couldn't fly. She stood in the middle of the floor, ignoring the gunfire around her, trying to figure out what was happening, what she was doing wrong. "Peregrine!" McCoy shouted. "Get down!" The third terrorist aimed at her, screaming incoherently. A look of horror suddenly contorted his face, and he swooped toward the ceiling. His gun slipped out of his hand and smashed to the floor. Hiram casually let the man drop 30 feet as the other terrorists were clubbed to the floor by temple security guards. Kamel bustled up, a look of incredulous horror on his face. "Thank the merciful ones who weren't injured," he cried, rushing to Peregrine, who was still dazed and confused at what had happened to her. "Yeah," she said distantly. Then her eyes focused on the walls of the chamber. "But look at all the damage." A small wooden statue, gilded and inlaid with faience and precious stones, lay in fragments at Peregrine's feet. She stopped and picked it up gently,
but the fragile wood turned to dust at her touch, leaving behind a twisted shell of gold and jewels. It survived for so long, only to be destroyed by this madness, she murmured softly.
Ah, yes, Kamel shrugged. Well, the walls can be restored, and we have more artifacts to put into display cases. Who were those people?
Father Squid asked, imperturbably brushing dust off his cassock.
The Nur, Kamel said. He spat on the floor. Fanatics.
McCoy rushed up to them, his camera slung over his shoulder. I thought I told you to be careful, he reproached Peregrine. Standing in the middle of a room with idiots blazing away with machine guns is not my idea of careful. Thank God that Hiram was watching that guy.
I know, Peregrine said, but it shouldn't have happened that way. I was trying to get airborne, but I couldn't. Nothing like this has ever happened to me before. It's strange.
She pushed the long hair out of her eyes, looking troubled.
I don't know what it is.
The chamber was still in turmoil. The terrorists could have slaughtered hundreds if they had chosen to shoot people rather than the symbols of the old religion. But as it was, several score of tourists had been hit by stray bullets or injured themselves trying to escape. Temple security guards were trying to help those who were hurt, but there were so many of them, lying crumpled on the stone benches, wailing, crying, screaming, bleeding. Peregrine turned from McCoy and the others, nauseated to the point of vomiting, but there was nothing in her stomach to throw up. McCoy held her as she was racked by dry heaves. When she stopped shuddering, she leaned against him gratefully. He took her hand gently. We better get you to Dr. Tachyon. On the way back to the Winter Palace Hotel, McCoy put his arm around her and drew her to him. Everything's gonna be okay, he soothed. You're probably just tired.
What if it isn't that? What if something is really wrong with me? What?
She asked in a horror-stricken whisper.
If I'll never fly again.
She buried her face against McCoy's shoulder as the others looked on in mute sympathy. Her tears soaked through his shirt as he stroked her long brown hair. Everything'll be all right, Perry. I promise.
I should have expected that, Tachyon said as Peregrine tearfully told him her story.
What do you mean? Asked McCoy. What's wrong with her?
Tachyon eyed Josh McCoy coldly. It's rather private. Between a woman and her physician. So,
anything that concerns Perry concerns me.
It's that way, is it? Tachyon looked at McCoy hostily.
It's all right, Josh, said Peregrine. She hugged him.
If that's the way you want it, McCoy turned to go. I'll wait for you in the bar.
Tachyon closed the door behind him. Now sit down and wipe your eyes. It's nothing serious, really. You're losing your feathers because of hormonal changes. Your mind has recognized your condition and has blocked your power as a means of protection.
Condition? Protection? What's wrong with me?
Peregrine perched on the edge of the sofa. Tachyon sat next to her and took her cold hands in his.
It's nothing that won't be cleared up in a few months. His lilac eyes looked straight into her blue ones. You're pregnant.
What? Peregrine sank back against the sofa cushions. That's impossible. How can I be pregnant? I've been on the pill forever.
She sat up again. What will NBC say? I wonder if this is covered in my contract.
I suggest you stop taking the pill and all other drugs, including alcohol. After all, you want a happy, healthy baby.
Taki, this is ridiculous.
I can't be pregnant. Are you sure?
Quite. And judging from your symptoms, I'd say you were about 4 months along. He nodded at the door. How will your lover feel about being a father?
Josh isn't the father. We've only been together for a couple of weeks.
Her mouth dropped open.
Oh, my God.
What is it?
Takyon asked, concern in his voice and on his face. She got off the sofa and began walking around the room, her wings fluttering absently.
Doctor, what would happen to the baby if both parents carried the wild card? Joker mother, ace father, that sort of thing.
She stopped by the marble mantel and fiddled with a dusty knick-knack set on it.
Why? Takyon asked suspiciously. If McCoy isn't the father, who is? An ace?
Yeah.
Who?
She sighed and put aside the figurine she was playing with. I don't think it really matters. I'll never see him again. It was just one night. She smiled in recollection.
What a night.
Takyon suddenly remembered the dinner at Aces High on Wildcard Day. Peregrine had left the restaurant with
Fortunato, he shouted. Fortunato's the father? You went to bed with that pimp? Have you no taste? You won't sleep with me, but you'll lay with him?
He stopped shouting and took several deep breaths. He walked to the room's bar and poured himself a brandy. Peregrine looked at him in amazement.
I cannot believe it, Takyon repeated,
swallowing most of the glass.
I have so much more to offer.
Right, she thought. Another notch on your bedpost. But then maybe I was just that for Fortunato, too.
Oh, let's face it, Dr. Peregrine said flippantly, angered by his self-centeredness.
He's the only man I've ever screwed that made me glow. It was absolutely incredible. She smiled inside at the furious look on Tachyon's face. But that's not important now.
What about the baby?
A multitude of thoughts dashed through her mind. I'll have to redo my apartment, she thought. I hope they fix the roof. A baby can't live in a house without a roof. Maybe I should move upstate. That would probably be better for a child. She smiled to herself. A big house with a large lawn, trees, and a garden, and dogs. I never thought about having a baby. Will I be a good mother? This is a good time to find out. I'm 32, and the old biological clock is ticking away. But how did it happen? The pill had always worked before. Fortunato's powers, she realized, are based on his potent sexuality. Perhaps they somehow circumvented the contraceptives. Fortunato and Josh, how would he react to the news? What would he think? Tachyon's voice broke into a reverie.
Have you heard a word I've said? He demanded.
Peregrine blushed. I'm sorry. I was thinking about being a mother.
He groaned. Perry, it's not that simple, he said gently.
Why not?
Both you and that man have the wild card. Therefore, the child will have a 90% chance of dying before or at birth. A 9% chance of being a joker, and 1%, he emphasized, of being an ace. He drank more brandy. The odds are terrible, terrible. The child has no chance, none at all. Peregrine began pacing back and forth.
Is there something you can do, some sort of test, that can tell if the baby is all right now?
Well, yes, I can do an
ultrasound. It's abysmally primitive, but it'll tell if the child is developing normally or not. If the baby is not, I suggest no. I urge you, very strongly, to have an abortion. There are already enough jokers in this world, he said bitterly. And if the baby is normal? Tachyon sighed. The virus often doesn't express itself until birth. If the child survives the birth trauma, without the virus manifesting, then you wait. Wait and wonder what will happen and when it will happen. Peregrine, if you allow the child to be born, you will spend your whole life in agony, worrying and trying to protect it from everything. Consider the stresses of childhood and adolescence, any one of which might trigger the virus. Is that fair to you, to your child, to the man waiting for you downstairs? Providing, Tachyon added coldly, he still wants to be a part of your life when he learns of this. I'll have to take my chances with Josh, she said swiftly, coming again to the thought that dominated her mind. Can you do the ultrasound soon? I'll see if I can make arrangements at the hospital. If we can't do it in Luxor, then you'll have to wait till we get back to Cairo. If the child is abnormal, you must consider an abortion. Actually, you should have an abortion, regardless. She stared at him. Destroy what may be a healthy human being? It might be like me, she argued. Or Fortunato. Perry, you don't know how good the virus was to you. You parlayed your wings into fame and financial success. You are one of the fortunate few. Of course I am. I mean, I'm pretty, but nothing special. Pretty girls are a dime a dozen. Actually, I have you to thank for my success. This is the first time anyone has thanked me for helping to destroy the lives of millions of people, Tachyon said grimly. You tried to stop it, she said reassuringly. It's not your fault Jetboy screwed up. Perry, Tachyon said grimly, changing the subject as if the failures of the past were too painful to dwell upon. If you don't terminate the pregnancy, you'll be showing very shortly. You'd better start thinking about what you're going to tell people. Why, the truth, of course, that I'm going to have a baby. What if they ask about the father? That's nobody's business but mine. And, I would submit, Tachyon said, McCoy's. I guess you're right. But the world doesn't have to know about Fortunato. Please don't tell anyone. I hate for him to read it in the papers. I'd rather tell him myself. If I ever see him again, she added silently. Please? It's not my place to inform him, Tachyon said coldly. But he must be told. It is his right. He frowned. I don't know what you saw in that man. If it had been me, this would have never happened. You've said that before, Peregrine said, annoyance showing on her face. But it's a little too late for might have been's. Eventually, everything will be fine. Everything is not going to be fine, said Tachyon firmly. The odds are the child will die or be a joker, and I don't think that you're strong enough to deal with either of those possibilities. I'll have to wait and see, Peregrine said pragmatically. She turned to leave. I guess I better break the news to Josh. He'll be glad it's nothing serious. And that you're carrying the child of another man? Asked Tachyon. If you can maintain your relationship through this, then McCoy is a very unusual man. He is, Doctor, she assured him, and herself. He is.
Peregrine walked slowly to the bar, remembering the day she and McCoy had met. He had made his interest in her evident from the very first, when they were introduced at the NBC offices in November. A talented cameraman and freelance documentary maker, he had jumped at the chance to film the tour. And, as he later confessed to Peregrine, the opportunity to meet her up close and personal. Peregrine was almost over her obsession with Fortunato, and McCoy's attentions had helped. They had teased and tantalized each other until they finally ended up in bed together in Argentina. They'd shared a room ever since. But McCoy couldn't arouse in her the sexual passion that Fortunato had. She doubted if any man could. Peregrine had wanted him again after that wild night they'd had together. He was like a drug she craved. Every time the phone had rung or there was a knock at the door, she hoped it was Fortunato. But he'd never come back. With Chris Alice's help, she had found his mother and learned that the ace had left New York and was somewhere in the Orient, probably Japan. The realization that he had left her so casually helped her get over him, but now he rushed back into her mind. She wondered how he would feel about her pregnancy, about being a father. Would he ever even know? She sighed. Josh McCoy, she told herself sternly, is a wonderful man, and you love him. Don't blow it over a man you'll probably never see again. But if I did see him again, what would it be like? For the millionth time she relived her hours with Fortunato, just thinking about it made her want him, or McCoy. Josh was drinking a Stella beer. As he saw her, he signaled the waiter and they arrived at his table together. "I'll have another beer," McCoy told the waiter. "Some wine, Perry?" "No, thanks. Do you have any bottled water?" she asked the waiter. "Certainly, madam. We have Perrier." "Oh, that'll be fine." "Well," McCoy asked, "what did Tachyon have to say? Are you okay?" "Not as brave about telling him this as I thought I'd be," Peregrine said to herself. "What if he can't deal with it?" It was best, she decided, to simply tell him the truth. "There's nothing wrong with me. Nothing that time won't cure." She took a sip of the drink the waiter placed in front of her and murmured, "I'm gonna have a baby." "What?" McCoy almost dropped his beer. "A baby?" She nodded, looking at him directly for the first time since she had sat down. "I really love you," said silently. "Please don't make this any harder on me than it already is." "Mine?" he inquired calmly. This was going to be the hard part. "No," she admitted. Josh downed the rest of his beer and picked up the second bottle. "If I'm not the father, who is? Bruce Willis?" Peregrine made a face. "Keith Hernandez? Bob Weir? Senator Hartman? Who?" She raised an eyebrow at him. "Regardless of what the supermarket tabloids and apparently you think, I do not sleep with every man my name is linked with." She drank some Perrier. "In fact, I happen to be rather particular about choosing bedmates." She grinned mischievously. "I picked you, after all." "Don't try to change the subject," he warned. "Who's the father?" "Do you really want to know?" Josh nodded curtly. "Why?" "Because," he sighed, "I happen to love you, and I think it's important that I know who is the father of your baby." "Does he know yet?" "How can he? I just found out myself." "Do you love him?" McCoy asked, frowning. "Why did you break off your relationship? Was it him?" Josh
Peregrine explained patiently. There was no relationship. It was one night. I met this man, and we went to bed. I never saw him again. Although not, she silently added, for lack of trying. McCoy's frown deepened. Are you in the habit of going to bed with anybody who catches your fancy? Peregrine flushed. No, I just told you I'm not. She laid her hand on his. Please understand. I had no idea you were in my future when I met him. You knew you weren't my first the first time we made love. And after all, she challenged, I'm surely not the first woman you've slept with, am I? No, but I was hoping you'd be the last. McCoy ran his hand through his hair. This really puts a cramp into my plans. What do you mean? Well, what about the father? Is he going to just stand quietly by while I marry the mother of his kid? You want to marry me? For the first time, Peregrine felt that everything would work out right. Yeah, I do. What's so strange about that? Is this guy going to be a problem? Who is it anyhow? It's an ace, she said slowly. Who? McCoy insisted. Oh, hell, she thought. Josh knows a lot about the New York scene. He's sure to have heard of Fortunato. What if he has the same attitude Tachyon has? Maybe I shouldn't tell him, but maybe he has the right to know. His name's Fortunato. Fortunato! Exploded McCoy. That guy with all the hookers? Geishas, he calls them. You slept with him? He gulped down more beer. I really don't see that it matters now. It happened. And if you must know, he's very charming. Okay. Okay, McCoy glowered. If you're going to be jealous of every man I ever slept with, then I don't give us very much of a chance. And marriage is out of the question. Come on, Perry. Give me a break. This is kind of unexpected. Well, it's a shock to me, too. This morning, I thought I was tired. This afternoon, I find out I'm pregnant. A shadow fell over their table. It was Tachyon, in a lilac silk suit that matched his eyes. Do you mind if I join you? He pulled out a chair without awaiting a reply. Brandy, he snapped to the waiter who was hovering nearby. They all stared at each other until the waiter made a precise little bow and left. I've spoken to the local hospital, Tachyon said finally. We can do the test tomorrow morning. What test? McCoy asked, looking from Peregrine to Tachyon. Did you tell him? Tachyon asked. I didn't have a chance to tell him about the virus, Peregrine said in a barely audible whisper. Virus? Because both Peregrine and the father, that is, carry the wild card. The child will have it, Tachyon said crisply. An ultrasound must be performed as soon as possible to determine the status of the fetus. If the child is developing abnormally, Peregrine must have an abortion. If the child is growing normally, I still advise termination, but that will, of course, be her decision. McCoy stared at Peregrine. You didn't tell me that. I didn't have a chance, she said defensively. There is a 1 in 100 chance that the child will be an ace, but a 9 in 100 chance that it will be a joker, added Tachyon relentlessly. A joker? You mean like one of those awful things that lives in Jokertown? Something horrible, an atrocity? My dear young man, began Tachyon angrily. Not all jokers. Josh, Peregrine interrupted softly. I'm a joker. Both men turned to her. I am, she insisted. Jokers have physical deformities. The wings fluttered. Like these. I'm a joker.
This discussion is getting us nowhere, said Tachyon after a long silence. Perry, I'll see you tonight. He walked away without touching his brandy.
Well, said McCoy. Tachyon's little piece of news certainly puts a different light on the subject.
What do you mean?
She asked, a chill seizing her.
I hate jokers, McCoy burst out. They give me the creeps.
His knuckles were white on the beer bottle. Look, I can't go on with this.
I'll call New York and tell them to send you another cameraman. I'll get my gear out of your room.
You're leaving? Peregrine asked, stunned.
Yeah. Look, it's been a lot of fun, he said deliberately, and I've really enjoyed you. But I'll be damned if I'm going to spend my life raising some pimp's bastard, especially, he added as an afterthought, one that's going to develop into some kind of monster.
Peregrine winced as if she'd been slapped.
I thought you loved me, she said, her voice and wings quivering. You just asked me to marry you.
I guess I was wrong. He finished his beer and stood up.
Bye, Perry.
Peregrine couldn't face him as he left. She stared down at the table, cold and shaken, and didn't notice the intense, lingering look McCoy gave her as he left the bar.
Ahem.
Hiram Worcester seated himself across from her in the chair McCoy had just vacated. Peregrine shuddered.
It's true. He's gone, she thought. I will never, never, she told herself fiercely, get involved with another man. Never.
Where's McCoy? Father Squid, and I want to know if the two of you will join us for dinner.
Of course, he added, when she didn't respond. If you have other plans.
No, she said dully. No other plans. It'll just be me, I'm afraid. Josh is, out filming some local color. She wondered why she lied to one of her oldest friends.
Of course, Hiram beamed. Let's get Father Squid and retire to the dining room. Using my power always makes me hungry.
He stood and pulled out her chair.
Dinner was excellent, but she hardly tasted it.
Hiram wolfed down huge portions and waxed poetical about the Batarich Egyptian caviar and lamb shish kebab served with a wine called Ruby d'Egypte. He loudly urged Tachyon to try some when he joined them, but Tachyon declined with a shake of his head.
Are you ready for the meeting? He asked Peregrine.
Where's McCoy?
Out filming, answered Hiram. I suggest we go without him.
Peregrine murmured her agreement.
He wasn't invited anyway, Tachyon sniped.
Dr. Tachyon, Hiram Worcester, Father Squid, and Peregrine met with Opet Kamel in a small antechamber off the amphitheater that had been so severely damaged in the terrorist attack earlier that day.
There must be Noor spies among us, Kamel exclaimed, glancing around the room. That is the only way those dogs could have gotten through security. Or else they bribed one of my people. We're trying to ferret out the traitor now. The three assassins killed themselves after they were captured, Kamel said, the hatred in his voice making Peregrine doubt the strict truth of his words. They are now shahid, martyrs for Allah, at the instigation of that madman, Noor al-Allah. May he die a most painful and lingering death.
Kamel turned to Tachyon.
You see, doctor, that is why we need your assistance to protect ourselves.
His voice dragged on and on. Occasionally, Peregrine heard Hiram or Father Squid or Tachyon chime in, but she wasn't really listening. She knew the expression on her face was polite and inquisitive.
It was the face she wore when she had boring guests on her show, who blathered on and on about nothing. She wondered how Letterman was doing with Peregrine's perch. Probably fine. Her mind refused to stay on unimportant topics and wandered back to Josh McCoy. What could she have done to make him stay? Nothing. Perhaps it was better that he left, if that was his real attitude toward those stricken with the wild card. She thought back to Argentina, their first night together. She had summoned up her courage, put on her sexiest dress, and gone to his room with a bottle of champagne. McCoy had been occupied with a woman he picked up in the hotel bar. Peregrine, extremely embarrassed, had slunk back to her room and begun drinking the champagne. 15 minutes later, McCoy had appeared. It had taken so long, he explained, because he had to get rid of the woman. Peregrine was impressed by his supreme confidence. He was the first man she'd been with since Fortunato, and his touch was wonderful. They'd spent every night since then together, making love at least once a day. Tonight, she'd be alone. He hates you, she told herself, because you're a joker. She placed her left hand across her abdomen. We don't need him, Peregrine told the baby. We don't need anyone. Tachyon's voice broke through her reverie. I'll report this to Senator Hartman, the Red Cross, and the UN. I'm sure we can assist you somehow. Thank you. Thank you. Kamel reached across the table to take Tachyon's hands in gratitude. Now, he said, smiling at the others, perhaps you would like to meet my children. They have expressed a desire to talk to you all, especially you. He directed his penetrating stare at Peregrine. Me? Kamel nodded and stood. Come this way. They passed between the long golden curtains that separated the antechamber from the auditorium, and Kamel led them to another room where the living gods were waiting for them. Min was there, and bearded Osiris, bird-headed Thoth, and the floating brother and sister, as were Anubis and Isis, and a dozen others whose names Peregrine couldn't remember. They immediately surrounded the Americans and Dr. Tachyon, everyone talking at once. Peregrine found herself face to face with a large woman who smiled and spoke to her in Arabic. I'm sorry, Peregrine said, smiling back. I don't understand. The woman gestured to the bird-headed man standing close by, who immediately joined them. I am Thoth, he said in English, his beak giving him a strange clacking accent. Tarot has asked me to tell you that the son you bear will be born strong and healthy. Peregrine looked from one to the other, incredulity on her face. How did you know I'm pregnant? She demanded. Ah, we have known since we heard you were coming to the temple. But this trip was decided upon months ago. Yes. Osiris is cursed by knowing pieces of the future. Your future, your child, was in one of those pieces. Taurat said something, and Thoth smiled. She says not to worry. You will be a very good mother. I will? Taurat handed her a small linen pouch with hieroglyphs embroidered on it. Peregrine opened it and found a small amulet made of red stone. She examined it curiously. It is an Acheth, Thoth clacked. It represents the sun rising in the east. It will give you the strength and power of Ra the Great. It is for the child. Keep it until the boy is old enough to wear it. Thank you. I will. She impulsively hugged Taurat, who returned the gesture and then disappeared into the crowded room.
Come now, said Tot. The others wish to meet you. As Peregrine and Tot circulated among the gods, she was greeted with great affection by each. Why are they acting like this? She asked, after a particularly bone-crushing embrace from Happy, the bull. They are happy for you, Tot told her. The birth of a child is a wondrous thing, especially to one with wings. I see, she said, though she didn't. She had the feeling that Tot was holding something back, but the bird-headed man slipped back into the crowd before she could question him. Amid the greetings and extemporaneous speeches, she suddenly realized that she was exhausted. Peregrine caught Tachyon's eye, where he stood conversing with Anubis. She pointed to her watch, and Tachyon beckoned to her. As she joined them, she heard him ask Anubis about the threat of the Nur. Father Squid was close by, discussing theology with Osiris. The gods will protect us, replied Anubis, lifting his eyes upward. And from what I understand, security around the temple has been strengthened. Excuse me for interrupting, Peregrine apologized, addressing Tachyon. But don't we have that appointment early tomorrow morning? Burning Sky, I'd almost forgotten. What time is it? He lifted his eyebrows when he saw it was after one. We'd best go. It will take us an hour to get back to Luxor, and you, young lady, need your sleep. Peregrine entered her room at the Winter Palace Hotel with apprehension. McCoy's things were gone. She sank into a large armchair, and the tears that had been threatening all night came. She cried until she had no more tears left, and her head ached with the strain. Go to bed, she told herself. It's been a long day. Someone tries to shoot you, you find out you're pregnant, and the man you love leaves you. Next you'll find out that NBC's canceled Peregrine's Perch. At least you know your baby's gonna be all right, she thought as she undressed. She turned off the light and slipped into the lonely double bed. But her brain wouldn't turn off. What if Taut is wrong? What if the ultrasound reveals a deformity? I'll have to have an abortion. I don't want one, but I can't bring another joker into the world. Abortion is against everything I was brought up to believe. But do you want to spend the rest of your life taking care of a monster? Can you take the life of a baby even if it's a joker? Back and forth she went, until she finally dropped off to sleep. Her last coherent thought was of Fortunato. What would he want? She wondered. She was awakened by Tachyon banging at her door. Peregrine, she foggily heard him call. Are you there? It's 7:30. She rolled out of bed, wrapped herself in the sheet, and opened the locked door. Tachyon stood there, annoyance written all over his face. He glared at her. Do you know what time it is? You were supposed to meet me downstairs half an hour ago. I know. Yell at me while I get dressed. She picked up her clothes and headed toward the bathroom. Tachyon closed the door behind him and eyed her sheet-clad body appreciatively. What happened here? He asked. Where's your paramour? Peregrine poked her head around the bathroom door and spoke around her toothbrush. Gone. Do you want to tell me about it? No. She glanced in the mirror as she quickly brushed her hair and frowned at her exhausted face and swollen red eyes. You look like hell, she told herself. She pulled on her clothes, pushed her feet into a pair of sandals, grabbed her bag, and joined Tachyon, who was waiting by the door. I'm sorry I overslept, she apologized, as they hurried through the lobby into the waiting cab. It took me forever to fall asleep.
Tachyon watched her intently as he helped her into the cab. They rode in silence, her mind full of the baby, McCoy, Fortunato, motherhood, her career. Suddenly she asked, If the test... She took a deep breath and began again. If the test shows that there is some abnormality, will they be able to do the abortion today? Tachyon took her cold hands in his. Yes. Please, she prayed. Please don't let anything be wrong with my baby. Tachyon's voice broke into her thoughts. What? Perry, what happened with McCoy? She stared out the window and withdrew her hand from Tachyon's. He's gone, she said dully, twisting her fingers together. I guess he went back to New York. She blinked away tears. Everything seemed okay. I mean about my being pregnant and Fortunato and all. But after he heard that if the baby lived, it would probably be a joker, well... Her tears began again. Tachyon handed her his lace-trimmed silk handkerchief. Peregrine took it and wiped her eyes. Well, she said, continuing her story, when Josh heard that, he decided he didn't want to have anything to do with me or the baby. So he left. She rolled Tachyon's handkerchief into a small damp ball. You truly love him, don't you? Tachyon asked gently. Peregrine nodded and pushed away more tears. If you have an abortion, will he come back? I don't know, and I don't care, she flared. If he can't accept me the way I am, then I don't want him. Tachyon shook his head. Poor Perry, he said softly. McCoy is a jackass. It seemed like an eternity before the cab rolled up in front of the hospital. As Tachyon went to consult with the receptionist, Peregrine leaned against the cool white wall of the waiting room and shut her eyes. She tried to make her mind go blank, but she couldn't stop thinking about McCoy. If he did come to you, you'd take him back, she accused herself. You know you would. He won't, though. Not with me carrying Fortunato's child. She opened her eyes as someone touched her arm. Are you sure you're all right? Tachyon asked. Just tired. She tried to smile. Scared? He asked. Yes, she admitted. I never really thought about having children, but now that I'm pregnant, I want to have a baby more than anything. Peregrine sighed and folded her arms protectively over her abdomen. But I hope that the baby is all right. They're paging the doctor who will perform the procedure, Tachyon said. I hope you're thirsty. You'll have to drink several quarts of water. He removed a pitcher and a glass from a tray held by the nurse standing beside him. You can start now. Peregrine began drinking. She'd finished 6 glasses before a short man in a white coat hurried up to them. Dr. Tachyon? He asked, grasping Tachyon's hand. I am Dr. Ali. It is a great pleasure to meet you and welcome you to my hospital. He turned to Peregrine. Is this the patient? Tachyon performed the introductions. Dr. Ali rubbed his hands together. Let's get on with it, he said. And they followed him to the OBGYN section of the hospital. You, young lady, into that room, he pointed. Remove all your clothing and put on the gown you'll find there. Keep drinking water. When you've changed, come back here and we'll perform the sonography. When Peregrine rejoined Tachyon, now wearing a white coat over his silken finery, and Dr. Ali, she was told to lie on an examining table. She followed their directions, clutching Tarut's amulet in her hand. A nurse raised the robe up and rubbed a clear gel on Peregrine's stomach. "Conductive jelly," Tachyon explained. "It helps carry the sound waves." The nurse began to move a small instrument that looked like a microphone over Peregrine's belly. "The transducer," said Tachyon, as he and Ali studied the image on the video screen in front of them.
"Well, what do you see?" Peregrine demanded.
"A moment, Perry." Tachyon and Ali conferred in low tones. "Can you print that?" Peregrine heard Tachyon ask. Dr. Ali gave the nurse instructions in Arabic, and very shortly a computer printout of the image appeared. "You can climb down now," said Tachyon. "We've seen everything there is to see."
"Well?" Peregrine asked anxiously.
"Everything looks fine so far," said Tachyon slowly. "The child appears to be developing normally."
"That's wonderful." She hugged him as he helped her down from the table.
"If you intend to go through with this pregnancy, I insist on an ultrasound every 4 to 5 weeks to monitor the baby's growth."
Peregrine nodded. "These sound waves won't hurt the baby, will they?"
"No," said Tachyon. "The only thing that can injure the child already exists within it."
Peregrine looked at Tachyon. "I know you feel you have to keep telling me that, but the baby is going to be just fine. I know it."
"Peregrine, this is not a fairy tale. You are not going to live happily ever after. This could ruin your life."
"Growing wings when I was 13 could have ruined my life, but it didn't. This isn't going to either."
Tachyon sighed. "There is no reasoning with you. Go put your clothes on. It's time we got back to Cairo."